Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
And welcome back, Rugby Rant fans. I'm the big guy, Scott Farrar. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. And with us again is one of our favorite people in the world, Wendy Young. Wendy, how are you?
I'm amazing. Thanks again for having me on your awesome show.
Amazing.
Listen, really appreciate it.
Are you a week from going on summer break too? Because that's I'm going to start feeling in a week and a half.
9 days. Yeah, we're counting it down. Bringing
teachers. Let's work through the summer. Thank you very much. But I have to say, I'm probably the first person outside of Wendy and her family to say publicly say she should have been an announcer. I will always put that feather in my cap on this show.
Awesome. Thank you.
Boom. She's been there for 2 years now. It's great to see. Listen, it's the small victories now that I don't have an MLR team, in the area that I have to
take them when you can.
It'll always be the 2022 MLR championship and the fact that I called Wendy Young being a game day announcer.
Let's see. Those are my two. Badge of honor, Wendy.
I know. I need it, like right here.
Oh, God. But yes, we are here again for another week, episode 174.
Nice.
Or 181 if you're using my count. last week, which is off. But yes, 174. We're getting closer and closer to that episode 200 mark, which is awesome. But it's been a wild ride and it's fun, and we have a ton to talk about. We have MLR, we have club championships, we have internationals coming up. There's just a ton of rugby going on, qualifiers for a lot of stuff. Anyway, before we get to any of that, let's hit our round the pitch. So we're going to have Wendy kick off our round the pitch segment today. So Wendy, what's your first topic?
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about Freida Tafuna. She won the M.A. Sorensen Award, and that's a really prestigious collegiate award given to the best college player. They give one to the female and one to the male. So Wyatt Perry of BYU won the Rudy Schultz Award. But I want to talk about the M.A. Sorensen Award a little bit. It first happened in 2016, and it's an amazing award. And they always find kind of these gems in the college game. So they nominate a whole bunch of them, and then it's fan voted, which I think is really unique. And so you have to be a college player, college administrator, college coach to actually participate. And I think, Freida deserves it and has really busted onto the international scene as well. Of course, it's after Marianne Sorensen, who was a trailblazer at William & Mary and starting prof for USA in 1991 Rugby World Cup as well. So she, the award person that it's named after, is amazing as well. But Freida has had a really big impact on the USA Eagles. In particular, she has scored twice against the Black Ferns, when scoring against the Black Ferns is kind of a big deal. And we saw her do that against the Black Ferns this past weekend. And of course, she is in Australia now with the Eagles, and they are looking towards a huge match this weekend. It's really the difference between them being in WXV2 and them being in WXV1, which are qualification pathways for the 2025 Rugby World Cup. And it's just a really big opportunity for them. They're going to face Australia, and it's a big matchup. Australia has done a lot. They brought in Joe Yap, and they brought in a lot of their talent and have centralized their domestic game and made it a lot stronger. And so USA really needs to get a win against them, but I think it's going to be really tough.
Absolutely. It is going to be tough, but I think it's worth it. It's to get a good win against Australia and make that first league option. it's going to be worth it in the end, especially when maybe we can, Canada's already qualified for it.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, with this win against Australia, we can qualify and get some revenge on Canada. Because as I always like to say, ABC, always be Canada. You know, it's been tough goings, but we'll get back there. So, Rob, what's your first topic?
Yeah, well, we've talked about the fact that the United States is going to be playing Romania and Scotland in their two summer internationals, which we got to be excited about, obviously, especially with Scotland being out on the East Coast down there in Washington, D.C. But the United States is playing Romania here in Chicago. I'm getting excited that. So any of you guys that are watching, come say hi to Scott when they're playing that second game in Washington, D.C. I know Scott's making the trip down there. Come say hi to me on July 5th. In SeatGeek Stadium, where the United States is going to be putting on a show playing Romania. Tickets just went on sale. That's why I want to talk about this here, because I know they've been on sale for that match in a week's time. Where I think it's the, 13th. But they just went on sale for that match in SeatGeek. Historically, 7-2, the United States have put 7 over on Romania. But it's been a little tough to come by. Romania has been on an upsurge. The last win, though, for the United States was May 8th of 2023. It's just about a year ago, 31-17. So it should be a really good matchup, a good test. The 55-man squad has been announced. A lot of young guys, some uncapped individuals that I think a lot of us who follow the MR want to see. A guy like Colin Gross, for example, is a great individual who represents that category there, amongst others. And then, you know, I don't know, me for one, I want to see Cam Dolan get another cap and just add one more tally, maybe two more tallies in Washington, D.C. to make his quest to be the number one capped USA Eagle ever. So that's what I got. Turn it back to you.
Yeah, awesome. Connor McManus being named that 55-man squad. We'll see if he gets his first cap. Connor, obviously, born in the United States, raised in New Zealand. Coming back to the United States, back to New Zealand. He's been back and forth quite a bit, but guess what? He's eligible for the Eagles. Good young number 9 there. So we're going to see if he'll get a cap this year.
That's right. It's a good thing we have airplanes.
Absolutely. You know, I was hoping to maybe see Joe Basser on that list. He's a young lock in the MLR again. He's Australian, New Yorker by birth, Australian, raised. And as we're seeing some of our locks, get there in age, you know, I'm hoping to, he'll get a crack at it maybe the next cycle. He's another young guy. But speaking of my around the pitch topic, because, you know, got to have something, right? We're going to be talking about the referees and actually North American rugby referees. So shout out to Cisco Lopez, Kat Roach, and Talala Chowdhury. You know, those were the sevens referees. They were announced for the Olympic sevens in Paris. It's really good to see those referees not only get picked but represent North America. You've seen them all over social media in their work for PR7s and their work for HSBC and their work for local tournaments when they're around. So it's good to see not just the players play, but now we're seeing referees and there's a pathway. And they're showing that we could be out there on the international stage doing this. You know, it's great to see. I mean, I rarely speak highly of referees. I'm obviously joking. I love referees, but in all seriousness, it's just good to see. Yeah, they just don't love me. You know,
I don't have a red card. I need like a red card on my desk to be like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have more cards than cheese, Wendy. Yeah.
That's right. I have cheese. There you go. Cheese.
Yeah, see, the problem is the props will just eat the cheese.
That's right. I know. But,
yeah, I definitely, in my career, more cards than tries. That's for sure. Probably more cards than total points as well. But, it's good to see. So, Wendy, topic number 2.
Yeah, I think it's for me, it's the WXV and the Pacific Four and 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. Like that's been my focus the last 2 weeks. So we just had the Africa Cup. So we saw South Africa win that and then huge upset. Kenya was upset by Madagascar. And if you haven't seen the crowds of those matches in Madagascar, tens of thousands of people are showing up to these games in Madagascar on a work day. The tickets aren't free. it's generally a country where, you know, it's hard to get a job and to make funds. And so to sustain, and they're spending it on women's rugby. So I think that's really, really exciting. You mentioned it. Canada already made the WXV1. They're going to host it in Canada, which is a big deal for them. I think in general, we still don't know the venues of where those games are going to be played, but that's an opportunity for us to get up to some North American rugby potentially. And I think if USA, if we can beat Australia again this weekend, big deal. But, you know, I think that what's coming together is the WXV. So we've got, you know, some of our, we've got 11 of our 18 teams in now. And if you want to see graphics, I've got all of it on my site and everything. But over 61% of the teams are set for WXV. And then about half of those are qualified for the 2025 World Cup in London as well. And of course, these are huge opportunities for these teams. And then, you know, we'll, of course, we'll go to Australia for 29, and then we'll be in the United States for 2033. So it's just a huge launching off point for women's rugby, as we see professional hockey is getting its moment. Volleyball is getting its moment. Basketball is having its moment. Caitlin Clark started for the Fever tonight and dropped a three within first 2 minutes, right? Like women's rugby and women's sports are having a moment, and you need to get on board or just go away.
Right. There you go. So, Wendy, remind everybody where they can find your site and what sort of information that they're going to find useful there.
Yeah, YSC Rugby. And so it's yscrugby.com. And I cover everything in the United States. I cover the senior game in the United States. And then I cover internationally, all the international matches and a senior premiership. It mostly is what they call it overseas as well. And so just been doing that since 2016 and can't stop, won't stop. And love it.
Yeah, listen, I steal all of my, I don't say steal, I repurpose all of Wendy's content by you know, reposting what she does, especially her weekly recaps, because they're really great. So if you follow us on TikTok, you'll see like half our content is just reposting your Scrum Half Connection weekly recaps. So
oh, I love it. Yeah,
way easier. Yeah, so no, seriously, at YSC Rugby on all social media platforms. It's a great follow when he has a lot of good content. Rob, what's your second one?
Oh, my second one is really, really interesting. And some of this stuff has been out there pretty available in the media. And I'm sure a lot of you folks know about it, but some other stuff has gone under the radar, which is why I'm going to bundle it together. I'm bundling. That's what I do. I'm a bundler. The league is ramping up for the MLR draft. We don't know when it's going to take place. We do know that it's going to take place. I'm hearing rumblings that will continue to be a show built around it. So we'll wait and see what happens in that regard. But here's what we do know. MLR Rising, it's a showcase. It's basically been taken over from Utah, which was in its former iteration in Utah, the Collegiate Rugby Shield. So shout out to Sparksy and Nick Colling, who was their brainchild. They really made it happen for the last 2 years. And now the MLR is taking it over, which I think is a good move. I know that they've hired Tim Brown, who, by the way, Tim Brown, check out my interview with Tim and discussion about a lot of things rugby happening, particularly MLR Rising and some collegiate rugby out there in the Eastern Seaboard. It'll be coming out this week, so check it out. Nevertheless, he's running it. It's going to be at Mary Washington University in Fredericksburg, Virginia, about a stone's throw from his house. On July 8th through 13th, all the players have to do, they need to register. And I think it's a one-stop shop registration link on the MLR website. If you go to news, and I think it's an April 26th date on the MLR website, you can get the link and sign up if you're a college player and you sign up for both. They're going to select 50 to 52 players. The players, once they fly out there on their own dime, will be taken care of for the entire week, put up and, you know, boarded and everything like that, go through the training processes, go through, you know, S&C and all that stuff. So once they get out there, they're going to be taken care of, and then they're going to go through and play a game. And I think it has a lot of potential to raise some visibility of some players that maybe have flown below the radar, which is a good thing. There's a webinar for those players next week on May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's a link for it was released today. The draft process, what MLR Rising is all about, the eligibility process, just answering all those questions. I think it's something that Scott, Ty, and I have talked about the last couple of years that the MLR needed to make clear to avoid any concerns regarding eligibility conflicts. So please register again. That's a one-stop shop. And then finally, I just want to recognize the Chicago Hounds. They had a college recruitment day. This is the part that probably flew under the radar. Went to the game on Saturday against Old Glory DC. They had a college recruitment day during the morning prior to the game. They invited Midwest schools to that recruitment day, asked all those schools to select three of their top players to come and join in the fun. Basically, they talked about, gave me behind-the-scenes tour, locker rooms, facilities, everything. They did a presentation by James English about the ethos and the values of the Chicago Hounds, kind of gave an inside look at the Chicago Hounds, the draft process and the academy process that they use. They got to watch warmups from on the field, and then they got to watch the game for the VIP box. 31 players turned up, 8 schools represented. They include Iowa, University of Kentucky, Lynwood, Louisville, Marion, Michigan State, Principia, Purdue, Thomas More, and Trinity. 2 USAU 20 players were in the house. So, sorry, a lot of information there, but I think it's important to recognize all the things that are being done behind the scenes and in front of the scenes to prepare for the MLR draft.
Few things I'd like to touch upon, Rob. One, you worked the game. You didn't just go to the match. It wasn't a home Chicago match. Aren't you employed by the Hounds as a sideline reporter?
I'm a contractor.
He's like, I went to the match. I was like, weren't you? Well, it's kind of funny.
So I go to. So my wife watches from the VIP lounge because she's got a disability and she needs to be where it's warm in case it gets cool out. So at any rate, so we walk up there and it's quiet as, I mean, quiet as a mouse. James is on cue. He's doing his talk to these kids. And we're like, we feel a little uncomfortable. So we were a little bit surprised it was there, but I wanted to give it its due. So, Maggie talked about some of the things he's doing in director of player ops with the Hounds. It was cool. It was cool to see.
And my second point is I sorely miss the collegiate combine. It was a fun event. It was something I feel like an event the MLR should have taken over and put on. And you have one on each coast and this is the time to do it. And you have those events like the Big Four does. And I mean, right now they're doing the NBA combine and you're seeing, Bronny James all over the friggin', all over the news here. And this is something you could have put on social media and really exploited, in my opinion. And it's not necessarily the best way to look at rugby talent, but it does give you, basic metrics on the athleticism of the players and stuff. Because the scrimmage at the end is not really the best. You're just kind of throwing kids together, but you're still giving the public some metrics on what these kids were doing. So I'm definitely going to miss that. But my last topic here is actually, guess what? Another referee topic. The July Internationals were the America's referees were appointed. And that first match in Chicago against Romania, you have 2 Canadians. And I found the name, although I'm probably going to ruin the pronunciation. Robin Kaluzniak will be an AR, and our buddy Chris Asmus will be the TMO. Chris will be the TMO for Scotland. Sorry about that. And also at the Scotland game, you're going to have who else? I had everything in front of me, and now it's gone. That's fun. Way to suck, Scott. Anyway, Cat Roach is also going to be an AR for the Romanian match over Chicago, and the other person, there's a fourth person, I missed it, so way to knock it on, Scott. Gotta love it. We have those prop hands. We had a guy on the team, he was our what the fuck did Cameras play? He was weird. He played a whole bunch of positions. He was kind of our utility guy. He had the most rugby knowledge, but man, we called him Hammer Hands for a reason, because that ball would come and
Hammer Hands.
Those hands would miss the ball, and you just hear a ding. And you knew it was going to be a knock on. Yeah,
there must be a person like that on every team, because we had a guy, my buddy Jeff Lapka. Jeff, we call him Cement, right? Because for the same reason,
we had a kid, and this poor kid, as much as he tried, he just wasn't understanding like the offsides line and when you can hit the game line on defense. And we had him in some B-side matches, and he was. Luckily, the referees we had, understanding he didn't understand, wouldn't necessarily card him to begin with, and we'd try and coach him up. But we nicknamed him Brick because he was dumb as a brick. He just couldn't get it. And listen, some people don't, some people do, but it's always fun. But gosh, around the pitch is over. We're going to actually have two topics we're talking about this week. We're packed, man. A lot of content this week. So the first topic we're going to talk about is I'm baby brain, people. I'm way out of it.
Men's and women's
Men's Club Championship coming up this weekend. Woo! The past 3 weeks have been just crazy. And then the second topic is we're going to kind of rank. As of now, we'll do our way too early playoff rankings. If the season ended today, which everybody hates, and they talk about that in other sports, and they're like, "Why are you talking about that?" Well, this is what we need to talk about. This is what's going on. But before we do any of those topics, we're going to hear some words from our sponsor.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
And we're here to talk about the club championships. It's one of those things that we haven't talked about on the show often, and we were trying to get into more of the club side of rugby and really give it its due. And you know, I gotta be honest, when we started with the show, we were really trying to mold our professional content, right? The MLR was what, 2 years and 5 matches in at that
point. 2 years and 5 matches in, yeah.
You know, and you know, we were trying to figure everything out, and you know, we had World Cups coming up, and the world was at an end when we started in March of 2020. So you know, it was hard to figure in how
the basements.
Yeah, exactly. it was hard to figure in how we were going to start talking about clubs, and you know, me, Rob, and Ty being in three different areas, and you know, we do have clubs around the country. So we didn't want to just localize it to only talking about what was local in our neck of the woods. So I'm really glad that we can now, you know, because of social media, we can really be in on the clubs around the scene. So Rob.
Let's be honest. I think, you know, COVID really put a damper on clubs quite mm-hmm. a bit, just not just participation, but also, you know, coming out of it. Like for example, 2 years ago when they were doing the Club Sevens championships, they were scrambling for venues. Now we're at a little different point in that, you know, that we're setting aside, okay, it's a 2-year contract. So clubs can, they know when that and can plan for, you know, should they get into the championship, should they get into those club finals, they know where it's going to be. It's kind of they can plan for that contingency. And so I think the world's changed. It's made a little bit more of I can appreciate the environment a bit more, and we can spend a little bit more time talking about it because there's more knowables, things that we can guarantee.
And to add on to that, I'm sure Wendy has a lot to say, but we interviewed Wes Overson, who's, you know, the Southwest Union president. And that's when he talked about having the regional playoffs in the same area in Vegas so that you knew, okay, it's going to be this cost next year because it cost us this, you know, last year. We know when to book this. We know how many players we could take. And like he had mentioned in his interview, you know, they also tried to have a tens tournament around that just in case you got knocked down a little early. You didn't go home without, you know, just a one match loss, you know, try and make it a weekend, even if you got knocked out. And I think that's what everybody's trying to do and kind of get back on track with that. But let's talk about the championships. And like I said, I'm not joking when I say I rip everything that has to do with women's sports from YSC. Literally, I put in the notes, the Instagram post that Wendy created so that everybody can look at it. We talk about the highlights of the men's and women's sides. But Wendy, take it away.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. I think it's going to be a really exciting weekend. And again, it's the third kind of round where we play our D1 matches on Friday, the semifinals, and then on Sunday we play the championships. So on Friday, you'll be able to watch on the Rugby Network The women's D1 is first, so we'll see Metropolis versus Nova, and then the second women's D1 will be San Diego, defending champions. This is from last year, actually. I'm reading the wrong. Someone replaced the schedule wrong there. Apologize. Let's try that again. So it's Utah Vipers versus Pittsburgh, and then Nova versus San Diego. So still, San Diego is defending champions. And so I think that's going to be really exciting. And then in our men's D1, we'll have a new champion this year because the Blacks didn't make it back. So Nova is back in it. Belmont Shore returns after a couple of, it's been like a decade since they've been there, maybe two. And then Dallas comes out having defeated Austin. And then the St. Louis Bombers make their return as well. They played a bunch of D2 and some other brackets as well. So that's all on Friday. And then on Saturday, we start with all of our women's D2, men's D2, and men's D3. So I believe it starts with the women's D2. So we'll see Phoenixville, White Horse, Sacramento Amazons make their return. They were champions a while ago. Tampa Bay Crew upset Knoxville at Gulf Coast. That was a huge win again. Mm-hmm. And then South Buffalo will have their first championship event, Final Four. Men's D2, Boston Irish Wolfhounds, Oceanside Chiefs, Miami Tridents. Another big upset there. And then Indianapolis rounds out that group. And then in men's D3, the Blacks made it through again. So defending champions get to return. And then we see some new teams down there. Red River Ruffians, Charles River, and Calusa. I had to look up a couple of those. I've never even heard of them. So that's exciting in itself. But I think the big ones are that, you know, San Diego's defending champion, Austin's defending champion. Everything else is wide open and really fun.
You know, you talk about South Buffalo. When I saw them, you know, coming through, being from New York, not that much is south of Buffalo, so I wonder why the fuck they named it South Buffalo Rugby. Like, you know, and it's we used to have a town close to us called Clarkstown, and they had Clarkstown North and Clarkstown South hockey teams. I'm like, why don't you just have one team? And then the problem is both teams stunk, so if you just took the best players from both teams, you'd have a really good team. But it's good to research some of these teams to see where they're at, because it is like, you know, looking at this at South Buffalo Rugby, if you're ever out there, heck, you know how to play. Boston Irish Wolfhounds, one of the teams we used to go watch all the time, being a UMass guy. If you're over in the Boston area, they have a great facility, four pitches caddy cornered against each other with a huge bar in the middle. It's always there. I mean, they have matches upon matches upon matches. You know, they'll have friendlies against service academies. They'll, you know, have international squads coming over, you know, club internationals coming over to play. So that's another good place to watch. But, you know, I think having the rugby on Friday and just looking at the Major League Rugby schedule, I don't think we have anybody on Friday this week. So it's a good thing. This'll be on TRN. If you're looking for rugby to watch, watch the first day of matches for this event. This is what we've been talking about privately. You know, we have our private conversations here, but we talk about getting the word out and how commercialization can change the way we do things in rugby. Well, this is part of it, right? If we can get a great turnout on TRN and kind of get a ball rolling in 5 years from now, maybe some of these clubs will be able to get a piece of whatever the production is, television production. Maybe we'll get a Fox Sports 2 night for this championship weekend because we have a relationship through MLR. You know, that's
just a corporate sponsor over the course of this series, something. You know, from the Sweet 16 on into the championships would be nice. You know, that they have a banner, they're, you know, featured prominently in the TRN production, because it was on TRN last week or 2 weekends ago at the, mm-hmm. Some of the super regionals. Mm-hmm. Although I'm going to disagree with this, Scott, for completely, totally, utterly, nonsensically selfish purposes and reasons.
Oh God, this is going to be something I hear about. Like,
it's going to be on Friday.
What are you doing on Friday?
I'm not doing anything. And my kid is not playing with the Bombers because his work won't let him out because he's giving finals. And so they're like, no, you got to stay and give finals. So he can't play in the semifinal.
Oh, wow. The whole summer off. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's a little disappointed. He has to fly out on, I think he's flying out Friday night if they win. And then he's, you know, hopefully they do, and he'll play on Sunday.
Wow! Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's
or he's just going to party.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, But like I said,
that's club rugby life, though.
It is club rugby.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, I got to tell you, like, I played in the club rugby semifinal D2 championships back in the day when I could move my neck and my knees. And, you know, it is a nice thing being able to spread it across Friday, having a match on Friday and then having another one on Sunday, give you a day rest in between. We used to go at it, you know, 2 days. And it's hard. That's hard. Wendy, I'm sure you have the same experience.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the data that I think, you know, because I'm on the a senior club council competitive committee also for USA Rugby, but that's some of the data that we've started to look at is that, you know, that when you have those back-to-back games, the injuries are worse. When you look at the score lines, sometimes Sunday are just absolute blowouts. Who's got the bench, who's got the reserves, who didn't suffer injuries. So I think that's kind of the mode that we're looking to go towards. And, I mean, ideally, we'd like to have everybody split Friday and Sunday, but there's a bit of a burden on those lower division clubs that maybe aren't as, you know, don't have the sponsorships and the opportunities, and their folks might need to work just like your son, you know? But eventually it would be nice to get there.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I'm talking, I'm getting old now. 15 years ago, college, maybe more than that.
Oh,
17 years ago. We used to go, we had this Division IV tournament up in Lindenville, Vermont. You know, so the Northeast had the Beast of the East, and we were like, yeah, we don't really want to go to Beast of the East. So we went to the what would they call the Snow Bowl, because it would be what our spring break around St. Patrick's Day, but in Vermont, it's still snowing, ton of ice. And they'd rent the farmers land out and make like five pitches. You can get, you know, five games going at the same time. So we would have a men's and women's tournament over 2 days. So you would hit all three matches on a Saturday for your pool play, because there'd be four teams in your pool. Yeah, and then the next day would
they didn't do 80-minute matches.
Yeah, 80 minutes.
And are they full-size pitches?
Oh yeah. I mean, we're talking farmland. He would take down the fence, the farmer. He'd move all the cows to a different pasture, and we could have fit five fields.
Wow.
And then the next day you would play your knockout stages, round robin, and you know we would have 35 guys in two hotel rooms. You know, we're in college at the time.
Two hotel rooms. Okay, maybe two hotel rooms, but I get what you're saying.
We had 15 to 16 guys in a hotel room.
That's gross. Yeah. But
knock on wood, I was always driving, so I at least got a space in the bed. But you know, and we have come a long way since then.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank
but
God.
It's just yeah. Listen, it's how we ply our trade at a level at that low of a level. I'll never forget those times. I show people pictures, because the first match, it would be a sheet of ice on every field, which sucked. So you never want to play the first match. Then you never want to play the second match, because now it hasn't melted. It's just shards of ice.
Oh, geez.
By the third match, it's just mud.
Do they do the Kool-Aid lines? We saw that in Colorado once when we were up there for a tryout, and they poured Kool-Aid so you could see the lines in the snow. I've never seen that before.
No, because it was ice, it was ice and mud, so they literally just spray paint. So it would just be electric yellow spray paint on the ice. Then when it got in between matches, you know, the teams who weren't playing would go spray paint the outlines again.
Wow.
And because because it was mud, they had flags, you know, marking the 22 and all that, so you could easily get the line. It was actually relatively straight, believe it or not. But it's the snowball. I think it was Linden State was the college. It
sounds horrible. Ice. Yeah. I only played on ice once. Yeah.
Ugh. And I had metal studs. Yeah. So it was like, I was playing hockey. I was skating.
Yeah.
But those are fun.
So I got to ask Wendy, while we're on the nature of the club championships, you know, D1 women's division, who you like in there? Is the favorite Nova, the Surfers, and they're going head to head in that first in the semifinal.
Yeah, I think this is so tough, you know, because the seeding is different than last year, or it's the same as last year, but we're talking about rotating it, right? So it's kind of the luck of the draw this year with Nova having to take on San Diego, because I do think those are the two best teams. I think Utah is an outlier. They're physical. They're strong. They showed, you know, a very tough Houston side. They beat them like 42-5, like whooped them, right? Like a really good Houston side. So I think Utah's good. But then, I mean, I can't say anything bad about the Forge either. Like Pittsburgh have been doing it in the trenches for years and have been on the cusp so many times of getting to the Final Four. and finally made it. So, I mean, I think this is the best women's D1 we've had in a really long time. And not to mention San Diego and Seattle's match at the Super Regionals was epic. I didn't get to see it, but I heard about it. I've read lots of reports about it. It was really, really good. So, I mean, they had a good match going into this where, you know, some of the other score lines were a little bit, you know, easier, I would say.
Excited. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think this is the best D1s we've ever had.
What do you make of that controversial Belmont Shore? Because you mentioned Seattle, the controversial Belmont Shore Seattle men's super regional final.
Yeah, so I guess there was some discrepancies on the score. Right. They were going into about the, you know, the latter half of the game, 20 minutes left or so, and the referee had a score, the number four had a score, and then the teams all had scores. They did not all match. And so it did have to go to a review. And Andrew King, I know, watched it. He's the chair of the competitions committee for USA Rugby Senior Club. He actually had to watch it and make sure. But there was a try recorded. Right. I'm not quite sure by who, but there was a try recorded incorrectly. So then
by Seattle.
Yep. The teams thought they were tied and they weren't at the end of regulation time. So they did go play. I hate those bubbles. They did go play overtime.
Wait, what the heck was that? Wait, time out.
Yeah,
what
it's
was
like
that?
It's a new MacBook thing where you're like, see, and it's not going to do it now.
I was like, what the frig did I touch?
Yeah. Now I'm going to look dumb, but you can like do stuff and it does things. But yes, I can't figure out how to turn it off. I wish I could. But yeah, so it's a controversy there. But Seattle was winning at the end of the regulation. They shouldn't have gone to overtime. So a mistake there. I think a mistake kind of all around. Like the number four job is incredibly important. And that's why in our union, we isolate the number four. We don't allow them to sit at the table and have like four friends distracting them, right? Like,
yeah, no, they should be by themselves.
What's happening? Yeah, like that's a really important job. And then like, I don't know the referee, but from what I have heard, they also were not taking score. And so you can, as a center referee, you can do that. I've done that, but you need to make sure your AR is taking score for you, or you have someone that's doing that responsibility for you. You can absolutely hand that off. Right. If you want to, but you better make sure that you've handed off to a competent person, including the number four. I usually would have handed off to both ARs and said, like, everybody takes score just to be safe. Right.
So. Have we not come to this is 2024 and Wendy just made a thumbs up and it popped up on the screen. Why don't the center refs have a clicker like umpires do? You ever see umpires who are umpiring games in the league and they might be a little older and they got their little counter there about strikes and balls. So they're clicking it.
Five, there is an app two, on your Apple three. Watch, but yeah, you can do it. But then you're in the middle of a game kind of fiddling with your watch.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. You just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, five, six, seven. And you know, at least maybe not official, you know, maybe as an aid device to
well, you know. Right. Like even just simple paper and pencil, like have a little, you know, pad in your, or, you know, a cardboard.
Have the little volleyball table, thing on the table. Just, you know, something
in front of you, you know? Yeah, that also scoreboards can help all of these situations also, right? Because someone's going to yell at you if the score's wrong, right? Like, so, and I don't know everything about the match. I only got, you know, a small debrief, but unfortunate incident. You know, I know both sides feel, the teams in particular feel like this was done wrong and this was done right. I know there's a lot of feelings there. Yeah, tough one.
Yeah, but I mean, how many times has this actually happened at this level? You know?
Yeah.
So mistakes happen, as we know.
No, right. The only problem is it happens. This is almost the worst possible outcome, right? Because you have a team that gets a try awarded when it was actually a penalty. In the end of regulation, the score is tied. They go play 20 minutes of overtime, from what I understand. The team that actually was awarded that you know, mystery try actually won and was declared the winner at the, that would be Seattle at the end of overtime, only to have, you know, a Belmont Shore, you know, complaining and registering. I think they were registering, a complaint about the score. And then they had to go back and watch it and then declare a different winner. And it's almost like the worst possible outcome, especially in D1.
Okay. Let me disagree with you on the words you chose to use. The worst possible circumstance, best outcome. The team who scored the most point, who had the most points at the end of the regulation, got the win.
Agree.
After all was said and done.
I mean, they got it right at the end of the day. Agreed.
Worst possible circumstance.
It wasn't like right after the game.
No, I know. It took days. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I completely understand that. I'm just saying I think I would change it to worst possible circumstance of it happening.
Yeah. Probably the worst possible outcome would be if the laws were written as such that, you know, you cannot go back and change it.
Oh, yeah.
After, you know, after 15 minutes or after all the parties have walked off the pitch.
Right.
And some sports do that. And then when you realize there's an error, you're like, we really screwed this up.
I'll never forget watching college hockey, obviously a Michigan fan, playing Ohio State. Ohio State scored a goal because the puck went under the side of the goal.
Oh, geez.
They called it a goal. They watched the replay and confirmed it was a goal. I threw my shoe at the television. I threw my shoe. So I think the other part that we're missing is because this did happen and because of all the hullabaloo that it caused, it's going to have us rethink how we're doing this, which is good because obviously there's
as long as you learn from it.
I think there's several things, right? Like isolating that number four, helping them understand how critical that job is. Were they using RX? Like, I don't know. We required our teams to be doing it in RX, like all those things, right? And yeah, I mean, paper doesn't lie, right? So, well, it did sort of in this case, but that's why we want multiple people doing it. But,
I mean,
I still think like our men's D1, regardless of all of that, like this is a big year, I think, again, for them. You know, the Blacks won it last year. They're not here. And so then Belmont Shores won it in 2012. They placed second in 2010 and 2018. But then Dallas has won it in 2022. So like that's two big names. And then, of course, Nova's in with the women and the men this year. So I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And the Bombers are they're no slouch either. They've been around the block. They're a storied club. So I think it's going to be just crackers on Friday.
And what's interesting about the Bombers Club, and obviously insider knowledge, but, you know, having gone to Wisconsin last year in the Club Sevens championships, they were right there against Nova in the final. I mean, it was nip and tuck the whole way, and they just lost out in that last minute. So, you know, they have a core guys that are really making up that club and moving it forward.
This is Rob's new thing now, because for 4 years it was my son plays at Lindenwood.
Now
my son plays on the Bombers.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think it's going to be a great weekend. But we have another topic real quick we wanted to get to. That topic is our way too early, or I mean not way too early. It's halfway through the season, more than halfway through the season.
Yeah.
But how we think the playoffs are going to shake out. So you know, the playoffs
for Major League Rugby.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and the question at the beginning of the season was, what do the playoffs look like? We didn't know. And then they format, and then a team dropped out and they changed it. And then another team dropped out and they changed it. And then they decided on a format. And they were like, no, we're going to keep this. And then, no, we're not. And it just become this vicious cycle of format. But I believe they are doing the top, what, three teams still? Four teams.
Four from the east and the west.
Yeah, yep. Four from the east and the west. So the top two teams get the bye.
No.
Nope. Everybody plays. Nope.
Everybody plays.
No bye. Come on, right,
Scott. Yeah.
Listen, it's changed so much. I can't keep it together, man. Yeah. And honestly, why even win the league at that point if you could rest your player? If my point is, if you're going to have to play that first week regardless, unless it's the difference between a home and away. If I was just changing from one to two to play three or four, I'd lose that game to the rest of my guys.
I don't know. And having spoken with James English this weekend, and just, you know, the fact that Chicago was, you know, and it still is in second, at least in that, you know, in that conference in the East, and they're now, granted, New England has a game in hand. Right. Yep. And they're only 2 points ahead of Chicago, but Chicago's got to be liking their position. For a lot of different reasons, but in talking with him, he goes, you know, it would be immense to have at least one playoff match at home, let alone two. So I think for a lot of teams to be able to host two matches, I mean, New England's really, I have no doubt that.
Yeah, but you guys already beat New England in New England. So does that really matter?
It matters when you're a fan and you want to play and you want to play at home. And
you guys take the fans as like, oh, I want just win. Just win the friggin' championship. Just win.
No, I get it. But I mean, but the club wants to be able to bring in more revenue, bring in more fans, especially
You know what you do?
You'll bring in more fans next season, who practically sells out.
Yeah.
How many more fans are you going to bring in next season if the Hounds win the whole damn thing?
Well, obviously. but,
right then.
You know, they're bringing more, but my point Guess is what? They want to. They want to be.
How much money are the teams getting? Okay, let's just take this. Let's say Houston and New England are the West and the Eastern championships. Just for the sake of that's what the standings look like now. How much revenue are they getting for the championship?
Yeah, we're at Snapdragon.
I don't know, but even more reason to want to be able to host two games because you know if you get to that final, you're not going to get any revenue or ticket sales from that, you or know, from you that match, as far as we know.
Yeah, no, I'm with Rob though. I think, because when the Gilgronis were here, like Tier, we got a home game. We finally did well, and we got a home game, and it was massive, right? We had Houston fans coming in, Dallas fans came in, and it was a big shebang. And you know, the community club finally turned out, and I personally brought 10 of people from work. I was like, "Come, this is the biggest event we're gonna have. It's so great." So, I mean, I totally get what Rob is saying. It's another opportunity to prove that we're a winning side, not just come watch this rugby game, but come watch my winning team.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you.
And winning breeds interest.
Both of you. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. Winning breeds interest. You're going to get more fans.
Yeah.
I mean, just
for sure.
You know, look at those teams that have struggled and the difficulty in building a fan base.
But you're trying
to entice new fans to come and watch a game. And the team has, you know, only won three matches.
Different conversation, but again, things people aren't doing. So you have, you know, as a fan of Barstool Sports, you have Barstool Chicago office out there. And one of the guys in the Barstool office out there is PFT Commenter, who's an OG fan. I haven't seen him at any Hounds matches. I think he's a James Madison rugby player. You know, we got to start getting guys like that out to matches to say we do have high profile people in the sports commentary world that know about rugby. And, you know, he does comment on a lot of internationals. It'll comment on sevens. He doesn't talk shit about the MLR. And I think we just got to poke and prod him a little bit to get there. But let's talk about the standings right now. So currently the standings in the Western Conference, Houston 1, Seattle 2, San Diego 3, Dallas 4. In the Eastern Conference, that team in New England is number 1, Chicago is number 2, NOLA's number 3, DC is number 4. Do you guys think this is how it will shake out at the end of the season? I wouldn't say exactly 1, 2, 3, 4, but out of the teams that are there, do you think Utah and LA come back and get in the top four and Anthem and Sharks come back and get in the top four? We can safely say Anthem's not, right?
And I think LA's out too. I think that's a
maybe. Anthem's looking like the Mets. They're mathematically done by the way of the season. Yeah. And I'm a Mets fan, I could say that.
I think Utah has the
Chicago White Sox right now.
Yeah, I think Utah's in striking distance, right? They've got a couple of games coming up where they could pick up some points potentially. NOLA has looked better, but not invincible. So they'll play them. And then, you know, I mean, Dallas has been just, we don't know what we're going to see each week. Even in the players, right?
Like, flip a coin.
It's like Isaacs is at 15, he's at 14. Now he's at 10 again. Like, he's so great. You know, and they haven't just settled, it seems like. So I think the West has the most potential. I mean, points are the closest in that San Diego, Dallas, Utah range.
Right.
I think that's really interesting.
Agreed. I'd say this. I think Dallas has the toughest last five games in the league, right? They end with this coming week, Seattle, then you got New England, then you got Chicago, then you got Old Glory, and then you got, you know, that head-to-head against Utah. And isn't that week 18 the match that could be one of the most intriguing matches of that week, right? Because you got two teams right now that are going to be probably fighting you know, neck to neck to get that fourth playoff spot in the West. You know, so, and Utah, you know, like you said, Wendy, NOLA, San Diego, Seattle, New England, and Dallas. I mean, those are two tough schedules for those two teams, you know?
Yeah.
Well, here's the point. So you look at the last week of the season, right? New England's playing Anthem. Let's say New England and Chicago are tied for points, but let's say New England's up by one, right? Because technically Chicago has the beat on them right now. New England's up by one. Would you sacrifice, again, the option of playing some guys that don't normally get playing time and rest everybody because you know you're playing Anthem? It could come down to that. And New England has, you know, lost two big players so far, right? Do they want to risk somebody getting hurt playing an Anthem team, you know, we know what Anthem is. Listen, I have friends on Anthem. We know what they are right now. You know, I think by the end of the season, we might see New England, if they're close, still make that decision to kind of, I still think their backups will win the match, but you know, if it's close between one and two, what decision do you make there? You know, it could become a reality.
Yeah, I think you got to go for the win. So maybe you start a couple off the bench, maybe two or three. But we've seen some close games where people have taken, you know, they've been like, oh, we're going to take Anthem. It's going to be easy. And then they've had to empty the bench in the 60th minute and just make sure they're going to win. You know, Anthem are the freshmen, right? Like, they're getting it together. It's getting better. They're scoring lots of tries.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. They're going to win. And it, you don't want it to be week 17, week 18. And
listen,
you lose
right
your first
now,
spot, you know,
that right now they have more tries than Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the same amount of tries as LA. They have more tries. Okay. Rob, answer this question. Out of the top four teams in the Western Conference,
yeah,
who has less tries than Anthem?
I believe that's Seattle.
San Diego.
Oh, I thought it was Seattle too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. Tries for 37 for Seattle. Tries for San Diego, 25.
Seattle kicks a lot, though. They like those PGs. What's your point?
Anthem has 28 tries for this season. So, I mean, that's a big – that's what gets me shaky about San Diego. Eventually, do we see Dallas jump San Diego and Utah then knock San Diego out of playoff contention?
No. I'm just not seeing it. If I look at the road ahead – I actually have on my list. I think San Diego can take Seattle. The thing for me in the standings, the thing for me is that I think Seattle has a game in hand against San Diego. But if you look at San Diego's schedule, it's New England. That's a tough one coming up here in week 12. Then you've got LA, Utah, the Anthem, and then Chicago, right? So, you know, you look at that, they should probably, in all likelihood, they should be 3-2, maybe 4-1. You know,
yeah, picking up 12 to 15 points pretty easily. Yeah,
right, right. As opposed to Seattle has got Dallas, who you never know what you're going to get. If Vara runs rumshot over the opposition like he did 2 weeks ago, plays like a bat out of hell, he's difficult to deal with. But then you got Old Glory, but then you got Utah, Houston, and LA. So, I mean, Seattle's got a pretty favorable schedule too, with that game in hand going to this next coming week set. But it's a tough call. I mean, it really is a tough call between those two.
Yeah, if I could make a prediction, I would say the West stays as it is. Mm-hmm. I think the East is where there's going to be some fluttering and changing.
So my next
question
is,
what do you think is going to change?
Well, hold on. Let's talk about a specific team right now. The Miami Sharks just came out and had a big win, right? So if you look at the rest of their schedule, they're on a bye week this week. Then they're at home against New England. Then they are away against L.A., at home against NOLA, away against Anthem. I'm sorry. Away against Anthem, at home against OGs, and away at Chicago Hounds. Now, if you look at those last two matches, let's say they lose to New England, okay? They're still kind of keep staying in contention. Let's say they beat LA. Let's say they beat NOLA. Let's say they beat Anthem. Now they have a dogfight against Old Glory. If it comes down to the points, again, we can see again, they beat Old Glory, and maybe they jump them. But even if they lose to Old Glory, that game against the Hounds at the end, if the Hounds are firmly in second place and there's no shot for them to get first place or drop down to third place, again, Miami.
You think they throw it? Yeah.
I don't know if they throw it, but if they rest guys, you know, maybe that gives Miami just enough points to get past OGs. Now, again, we're kind of far out in this situation, mm-hmm. but I could see, again, this is some of the storylines we've kind of seen over the years on that last week coming down to who's doing the best for their club, who needs a win, who needs bonus points. I mean, Rooney's broken Rob's heart 2 years in a row on bonus points to get into playoffs, So, I mean, it happens. I'm just using that as a, you know, say that it happens, and that's why it's exciting. But, you know, I wonder if Miami is the one who's going to jump OGs, because OGs have been up and down all season. So,
yeah.
So now that we talked about that, Wendy, what do you think about the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think this is the one with the most potential to have some shifts. And I was thinking about Miami, not quite in the way you were. I'm more thinking about Old Glory, where we haven't seen the consistency. Frankly, we haven't seen the consistency of Old Glory in a while, I think. I think they kind of struggled there. And so that's the team that I think would be the most potential to drop down. And this win with Miami this weekend, definitely, I saw it and was like, am I seeing this wrong? You know? Yeah. So I think that it's interesting. And, you know, Miami just picked up, I forget, they just picked him up this week, but he's like a former
center. Yeah.
Like amazing guy. Like, So, I mean, they're not done. And I mean, these late, you know, transfers and adds to your team can really make a difference. So I think they've got some big potential there. And then Nola, again, I think it's the Nola is not consistent. DC is not consistent. Chicago Hounds are looking better, more consistent. I like their coach. He's great. So I think it's that 3-4-5. We could see Miami go all the way or just go to 4. But I think, you know, Old Glory not in the final four would be very interesting.
Matias Orlando, who's a former Puma.
Yeah, Puma. That's right. So, I was like, he's not Portugal. It starts with a P. I was like, but I don't want to say Portugal.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. As a matter of fact, I think there's a real chance that Nola could end up in that second spot. That's
you think so? Okay.
Really? It is. Well, yeah, I mean, Utah is up and down. They're beatable for Nola. That's coming up this mm-hmm. weekend. Then they got mm-hmm. Chicago, which, you know, that they got their – Nola got their ass handed to them down in New Orleans. But for some reason, Nola seems to play better away sometimes, and they're coming up to Chicago. Chicago didn't really light the house on fire this last weekend, absent Billy Meeks, which I think they really missed him in a lot of different ways. Then they got a tough one against Houston, but they end with Miami and LA, two teams that are beatable. Of course, Miami kicked the snot out of him and put up like a 50 mm-hmm. burger on him, mm-hmm. you know, down in Miami. So it you know, again, going like they're as inconsistent as Old Glory to some degree. We'll see what happens. I think part of their woes that we've seen up to this point, at least the middle part of the season, is a lot to do with the red cards and some bans that they had for, you know, four, mm-hmm. 3 to 4 game bans. So they were missing some key players. So they've got to mind their discipline, you know, and stay out of the bin box, you know?
Yeah.
I got a question for you, Rob. So you have Houston coming in, you have Rejects coming in, and then the other three matches are away in June. I'm just talking about June matches. I'm not talking about the away at SeatGeek or
for who
at Utah and for Nola. So, you know, not advantageous in my opinion, Nola as a home schedule, because Houston plays in the friggin' heat. That's not going to affect them.
Miami
plays. Maybe it'll affect the Rejects, but again, maybe the Rejects will be so far ahead by the second last week of the season, they're not going to need to field the full team, you know? So, do you think that, you know, because let's be honest, when Nola used to play these Northeast teams, especially towards the end of the season, the biggest advantage was the weather. You know, you can't replicate it in practice. And we've seen it, mm-hmm. you know, those Houston night games where they kick off at like 4. And then all of a sudden, once the second half starts around 7 and the ball's now wet, you have all these handling errors. And Houston seems to be able to not deal with, you know, to deal with that struggle better because they're used to it. You know, so do you think Nola's advantage as far as the humidity and heat is negated this season?
I don't know. It's a pretty damn tough place to play in that heat and humidity. Wendy knows that. And if you're not used to it, like, and I just go back to the club championships this weekend. Like, it's like probably mid-80s here in Chicago, mid to low 80s, but you could really feel it. And I said to a lot of boys in one of the clubs, I'm like, you guys better hydrate because it is going to be difficult to play. And it was an afternoon game. I think it was a 4 o'clock kick, didn't actually start till 4:30. And the boys from Utah were really suffering too to come into that match. But, you know, if you don't have your hydration and your nutrition squared away and you're not used to that heat, it can make for a long afternoon. I'm not going to lie to you. Is it negated? I think it's negated with the fact that the end of their schedule is Houston, Miami, LA, you know, and so there are teams that are all used to the heat, used to the difficulty. Maybe LA is a little bit of an exception, but Houston knows of it. Miami knows of it. So I don't know that it's going to be that big a deal. I'm only seeing, though, that they play Houston.
No, they're only playing Houston and the Rejects. I'm saying they're those other two teams are away.
Right, but I'm saying they play Utah this coming week in New Orleans. Then they come up to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Then they play in
Houston, Nola,
right? And then they play Miami, and then they play the Acorns. Mm-hmm. And I don't see New England.
June 22nd, New Orleans versus the Free Jacks at the Gold Mine.
Oh yeah, that they don't have that one on the app. Interesting.
That's a big one.
Because the app sucks. I'll be the first person to tell you the app never had any correct information about Rugby New York ever. The team would magically disappear from week to week. People go use the website. But anyway, yeah, before we end this topic, I'm going to get everybody, you're going to tell me your breakdown of the playoffs, your top four in each conference, and how those conferences are going to, I want your quarterfinals, your semis, and your champions. Wendy, you're up first.
All right, West Conference. I think it stays the same. So I think it's Houston, Seattle, San Diego, Dallas. You said semis, I think, is what we would do next. Yes. And so I think it's going to be Houston versus Dallas. I think Houston will take that one. And then Seattle versus San Diego. I think Seattle will come out. And then I think Seattle takes it all. They've got the experience. They've been there before. I think they're going to take the championship this year. Eastern Conference, this one's real hard. But I think it's New England. I think Chicago stays in second. I know they've got a tough run of games coming up, but I think they're preparing and doing the right things, as long as Billy Meeks is there, of course, too. But I think DC is going to move up. I don't know why I feel that way, but I feel like NOLA has got a tough road ahead of them too. So I think DC's three, and then why not? Let's throw Miami in there for fun. So Miami's four. So then it's New England versus Miami. New England wins. And then I think Chicago versus DC. And I think it's Chicago. But I still think Houston, or I think Seattle wins the whole thing still. Gotcha. I'm not sure.
Gotcha.
This is hard early out.
I can see Rob's doing his old man math, writing down his picks right now. I can see.
No, I got it. Okay, so I'm gonna start in the East. I'm gonna go with New England one, Chicago two. I'm gonna go NOLA three and Oh Glory four. I think in the semi there, it's New England against Chicago, and I'm gonna pick Chicago out of the East. I just think New England has a lot of injuries. I don't know what the status of Jason Patros is. But when he went down, I think that made a serious dent in their offense. Coming out of the West, I think you got Houston one, Seattle two, San Diego, then Dallas. So my matchups in that quarterfinals are the same as Wendy's, but I got Seattle and Houston coming out of the West, and I've got Houston coming out. I just think they are dialing on all cylinders. I think they play a brand and style of rugby. Everybody, it's typical South African, right? Everybody knows their role responsibility. Everybody knows how to play it. They just play a consistent pattern, and it's difficult. They have a solid defense and difficult to defend against. They play possession, they play territory, and it makes it really, really difficult on the opposition. And I would select what the hell? I'm going to go out on a limb and say Chicago wins.
Yeah.
Jesus H. Christ. Talk about delusions of grandeur. So I'm going with the Western Conference. Houston, Seattle, Dallas, San Diego will be my top four in the West. New England, Hounds, DC, NOLA will be my top in the East. Going back to the Western Conference, your semifinals, I think Houston and Seattle, beat their respective opponents. But in that Seattle-Dallas match, I think Dallas gives Seattle just a little bit of a fit. Going back to the Eastern Conference, I think Chicago and New England take care of their opponents handily. I think it'll be a big one between New England and NOLA. And Chicago, I think, will kind of knock DC down a peg. I think by the end of the season, you see DC didn't get hot at the right time, in my opinion. Semifinals, Eastern Conference, I have New England beating the Hounds. It's a revenge game for them. I have Houston beating Seattle. The number ones, in my opinion, are going to play each other in New England and Houston out in Snapdragon. Houston has played at Snapdragon before. I think they're running on all cylinders here. Don't have that many injuries occurring. I think Houston takes it all the way and gets over the hump. So that's another topic done and dusted. But before we go, Rob's going to talk a little bit about our Super Brew. We'll be right back.
Yeah, you know, it's been a lot of fun, the Super Brew has, and there's been a lot of changes. But and in round 11, that's going to go to Trent Adams, the San Diego Legion fan. He's going to get a $25 gift card or coupon, shall we say, to Shop MLR, courtesy of Rugby Now. And I just want to say a shout out. So, like, I'm wearing this nice Hounds lightweight pullover, crew neck pullover. LA has one that's at Rugby Now's shop, Shop MLR, powered by Rugby Now. They have one in there. It's a really nice weight, good feel, great for summer weather, cool nights. You know, if you're on the coast, certainly not if you're in Dallas like Wendy, she would melt. But up here in Chicago and in Wisconsin, it's a great nighttime piece. So again, looks pretty good. And it has, LA has a version that looks really sweet. It's nice blue with some yellow shades. But yeah, check it out. A lot of nice merch coming up on Shop MLR. So get yours while you can. And I'm hearing there's going to be a pretty cool jersey release sometime coming up in the not too distant future, but I can't give away anything now.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, it's funny. So I went to visit my buddy in Dallas last year, and I'm a hockey guy, and his son was getting into hockey. I was there mid-March, probably.
That's
bring
nice.
Him to the, yeah. Bring him to the ice rink. I was in shorts, t-shirt, flip-flops, because it was like 60s. All you Dallas people were bundled up like you were in friggin' Antarctica.
Okay, wait, like, I'm from Austin, people, but I get your point.
Oh, that's like, right, Austin. Yeah, it's, you know,
it's the same thing.
It's all the same.
Yeah, it's just
it's 3 hours away.
It's its own country.
I was Buffalo. If I tell people I'm from New York, they're just like New York.
Yeah. But
in all seriousness, I'm looking around going, right now in New York, it's only like 48. So we're you know.
Oh, it was like 92 today. Yeah.
Oh, I'm never moving to Texas.
Yeah. It's horrible. Never moving
to Texas.
Yeah.
Guys, this has been a great episode. The last thing we'll do is we'll have Wendy give a shout out again. Wendy, just give them the socials and everything.
Yeah, you can find me at YSC Rugby on everything. It's a good time. And I would say we're trying to build our TikTok following. So I think that's probably what we're pushing the most is trying to get everybody on the TikToks to follow us. We're funny, maybe.
Yeah, listen, like I said, I repost all their TikTok stuff because I'm too lazy to do my own research and her resources above approach. So why not steal it if I can?
All the kids are loving TikTok in my school. They put each other down and make funny videos about each other, and they get in all kinds of trouble. It's a wonderful.
Emery, you got to do some TikTok.
Great dances. Tool.
Yeah, we
drive me crazy here at the end of the school year, but you know,
whatever. Oh, but this is episode 174, done and dusted. I'm the big guy, Scott Farrar. That's Robin Hammer Hammerschmidt. Down there is Wendy Young, and we will see you at the next.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.